Blog Talk Radio.
Generally, the Constitution is a charter of negative liberties. Says what the states can't do to you, says what the federal government can't do to you, but it doesn't say what the federal government or the state government must do on your behalf.
Fat on a rough road, riding high.
You didn't build that.
Through the mountains, climbing, twisting, turning further from my home.
Shut up your mouth, Obama. Shut up your mouth, Obama.
Young, like a new moon rising, fierce.
I've got a pen.
Through the rain and lightning, wandering out into this great unknown.
Yes, we can. Yes, we can.
And I don't want no one to cry, but tell them if I don't survive, I was born free.
I've got a pen.
I was born free.
And I've got a phone.
Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall.
Like the grandest canyon, wild, like an untamed stallion. If you can't see my heart, you must be blind.
What difference at this point does it make?
You can knock me down and watch me bleed, but you can't keep no chains on me. I was born free.
I've got a pen.
I am your captain for this two-hour pleasure cruise, where we are dedicated to the fight and the preservation of freedom, regardless of that cost. Cost? Ah! No. There is no cost when it comes to freedom. You don't think about it. You just do it. It ain't cheap. All right. So, what is? You been to the stupid market lately? Huh? Friggin' avocados. Trying to pass this off as some kind of sale. You got this tiny little shriveled up little raisin here. Yeah, 2 for $4. Really? Wow. Oh, hell, that's a bargain. Not. Nothing's cheap, all right? Nothing is. Nothing's cheap. Nothing. Depends on what you can afford. Well, can you afford tyranny or can you afford freedom? That's your decision to make. Me, personally? I vote for freedom, but that's me. I'm the crazy person. I'm the whack job. I'm the wacko. All right, tonight, we have a very special guest. She's been on the program before. You know who she is. Nancy Rubenstein Delgaitis. She's the Educational Director and Volunteer Coordinator of the Law Project for Psychiatric Rights. Psychiatric. It always takes me 50 times to say that word. A nonprofit public interest advocacy organization. Now, she's got a lot to share with us tonight. She was excited about coming on, and I'm always excited to have her. So let me shut up and let's bring her on and see what she's got to report. Hello, my dear. How are you tonight?
Hi, Captain. It's always wonderful to talk to you. It's always wonderful to talk to your listeners.
Thank you for calling in tonight. Well, now I did a little research here, and it's always nice to learn stuff. This National Alliance on Mental Illness. Now, what exactly is that? Do we need that? Why do we have it? Who are these people? What makes these people up? How did they get there? Are they important? Are they good? Are they bad? What exactly really are they? I've never really heard of them before.
Well, that's the most important question that anybody could ask right now, and it's surprising that you haven't heard of them before. But let me tell you, they were founded back in San Francisco decades ago by the pharmaceutical company Eli Lilly. So the American public has the impression that this is an organization that's really created in the best interest of people who are suffering emotional distress and existential crises and altered states. But in fact, it's just a drug company shill. Now, many people who work within that have tried to change that over the years, and we were certainly hopeful that a few years ago when a woman named Myris Kendrick became president of that organization, because she was aware of the science, but she was not able to make any inroads. But it's important to understand that still to this day, nationally, 85% of the funding for NAMI comes from the drug companies. And this is and the thing is, as I'm saying this, I don't want to paint this in a way that makes everybody wrong. NAMI has served many people, and NAMI, and there are many people fighting and have been fighting for a long time to help NAMI become what it could be. But right now what we're seeing is a move in exactly the opposite direction. And so what I want to do is I want to read to you, it would be great also if we could let some of your listeners call in and ask questions. I don't want to just, get too talky here. But this is I asked Ken if I could come on the radio today, because there's a lot going on in New York right now with the National Alliance for Mental Illness. And that is that there's an award being given and there's going to be protesting. The award is being given by New York NAMI. It's being given to House Representative Tim Murphy, who is the sponsor of the Murphy Bill. I call it Murphy's Law.
What could go wrong?
Everything. So anyway, I thought I would just begin by reading you the letter written by one of my favorite New Yorkers, a woman by the name of Vera Sharav. Vera Sharav is a woman after my own heart, because she stood up in court in New York City in 2005 against Eli Lilly, whose documents had been compromised, and she had a copy of those documents showing that internally, this is in 2005, that the company knew that they were killing children. Zyprexa has been far more prescribed since then. But
wow.
Vera Sharav stood in there, and the judge said to her, you got to give these documents back. Why aren't you giving them back? And she, it's very difficult to get things on record in court. Many of your listeners may know this. But Vera Sharav answered, and this is on the record, she said, because they're killing little children. So this is a letter from Vera Sharav, and she's writing, and she has tried very much to stop what's going on with NAMI right now. And she writes, she writes to the Legal Action and Quality of Treatment Chair, and this is regarding what's going on with NAMI in New York. This is a final report and wake-up call to the Board of Directors. Regrettably, the focus of the organization has shifted from outreach, advocacy, and support for families and consumers who need help and information. Instead of speaking out as independent advocates to improve the quality and care and treatment, NAMI New York is influenced by lobbies for provider interests. An absence of leadership on the NAMI New York Board, a lack of vision, and confusion about the organization's position on fundamental issues have eroded its credibility among families and consumers. Furthermore, a passive board has allowed someone who does not level, communicate, or discuss issues in a collegial manner with NAMI members, someone who disdains democratic procedures, to take control of the organization as president and executive director. NAMI New York has lost its sight of its mission to consume. It goes on like this. And so we can talk about what goes on there and why this is important. And the most important thing is, who is this guy Tim Murphy and what is he saying? Because everyone thinks it's a good idea that we're all safer. There's no question in anyone's mind that that's what matters, that we all feel safe. And it also matters
that
people who are suffering receive care that helps them. Go ahead, Ken.
Well, I'm saying, you know, they always use that word. You know, it's always in, you know, what do they say? Good intentions are the road to hell is paved with good intentions. Well, I'm sure there are people in NAMI that are good and they go into it for the right reasons. But the people
and
that are
and then they get
charge,
confused with bad science and propaganda.
Right.
And here's how it works.
Right.
They tell people these drugs. Right. So here's the thing. Here's the thing that Representative Murphy has upside down. He's out there scaring people by saying, we have to scoop up and we have to evaluate everyone and we have to diagnose the untreated mentally ill because, and here's the most important part, because people who are untreated are dying 25 to 30 years earlier. Okay, let's get that straight. That's what he's saying, okay, and then we'll take that apart. He's saying that we need to screen and find people who have mental illness who have not been diagnosed. By the way, that's completely subjective, and the government doesn't support these diagnoses anymore. But we have to do this because, and this is the reason, because otherwise they're going to die 25 to 30 years early. Now, let's talk about what the truth is. The truth is that in 2010, the World Health Organization came up with a startling result when they studied outcomes for people diagnosed with so-called schizophrenia. What they found was that the best indicator for the best outcome was not living where the drugs are. And so they said this couldn't possibly be true. So they did it again. They replicated the study, and they came up with the same results. So the fact of the matter is that Representative Tim Murphy doesn't have the facts straight. It's quite the opposite. It is the treatment that is the problem. But
no,
think about this. Think about this is a major problem for the pharmaceutical industry. If everybody stops, if 20% of the population is taking these drugs and everybody finds out, wow, these are not tested, they're not studied, and the theory has been disproven based on which they were designed, the chemical imbalance theory, which is not true. What then? What happens if everybody stops taking their drugs? Well, that's a big part of GDP. And so this is why I'm suggesting that this is really about our economy. And really, it's about a bailout because so much of our economy is invested in pharmaceuticals. So it's really, really important for them to hang on to this propaganda that the public believes about mental illness. Now, before I stop ranting, let me just say this to your listeners. There's a statistic out there that says, and you have to listen, don't believe every statistic that you hear, but there's a statistic out there that's absolutely not true, and I'm going to help you understand that. There's a statistic out there that says that 10% of all murders are committed by people who are mentally ill. Okay? First of all, that statistic is not true, but think about this. If it were true, then what that statistic would be saying is that 90% of murders are committed by people who are sane.
Well
it makes no sense.
Well, the reason why what they do is, see, I still got this. I know I hate to be, you know, conspiratorial, but the government does want to have control. There's a certain population that they want to have, you know, in a certain state so that, you know, these drugs, they can keep them where they want them, do with them what they will. They have total control. I know it's only one part of it. There are lots of parts for everything, especially in the
pharmaceuticals. You know, Ken, I think you are absolutely right. And I think most Americans have come to the place today in 2014 where some of the things that they thought were conspiracy theories 5 years ago have turned out to be true. But here's
they want to use that against you. So if you get on any of these drugs, It doesn't matter what it is, whatever the names are, any of these antidepressant, any of these drugs, they can use that against you down the road and say that you are mentally ill, you are mentally insane, you can't get this, you can't do that,
Psychiatry is nothing but social control. I think people are figuring that out. It's nothing but social control. Right. And it's great when it takes care of some inconvenience that you have of dealing with someone, but then it's going to be everyone. And there's no science behind it. There's no science behind it.
You can't cure everything with a pill. You just can't. You can't cure everything with a pill, and doctors don't like that.
Yeah, but here's the problem. Here's the problem, Ken. Here's the problem. Our entire medical system is based on allopathic medicine, and that's all they do.
Right.
So there's something going on here. There's a change, and I'm trying to be positive about this. Yeah, I mean, and this is really what I want to say to your listener. This is the message. Yes, educate yourself. Yes, understand what's going on, but do not panic. Panic is the worst thing that people can possibly do. People who are taking these drugs, do not stop taking them. They're addictive. Some people can't ever stop. This is something I need to say. Your listeners need to hear this. Not everyone can get off an antidepressant, and that's not the worst thing in the world. You can live. You can take good care of yourself. Panic is the worst possible thing, and that's one of the things that I have to give. You know, you don't want to paint people as totally evil. And when you say they, as the government, it's a little. You know, yeah, I think what you're saying is true, but let's be careful not to demonize something so that it becomes larger than life. Because the matter of the truth is, we as a country are waking up, and we are going to take back our civil rights, our constitutional republican democracy. That's what we're doing, and it's scary, but people have to not panic and be afraid. We just have to know what's going on, and we have to act calmly. And stopping taking your drugs is not a good idea. It's not a good idea for anyone.
Let me ask you something about, because I'm sure that some of these drugs should be given to certain people. What I believe.
I'm not convinced of that at all.
Well, maybe there are.
Let me give you a quote. Right now, in Denmark and all over Europe, basically the consensus is that these drugs should never have been on the market. Period. These drugs came on the market because of Prozac, and when Prozac was admitted to, when FDA approved Prozac in this country, here's the history. Germany had banned it because healthy volunteers became suicidal on it. So there is, I've been studying these drugs. I was on them, not knowing anything about them, and then I've been studying them very, very intensively since 2009. And I am not impressed that these drugs ever needed to be used for anyone.
Well,
they're here now.
Well, my question is, if there is a way? What is a percentage of people that should not have been on them, meaning they don't fit the criteria that of somebody who is like insane or whatever, that should not have been prescribed?
Well, what's insane?
Well, I know exactly. How do you define that?
I think wanting to force somebody else to take drugs is insane, frankly.
Well, I'm with you on that one, absolutely.
But so that is the question. The question is, so you know, that's it. That's a great segue into something that I wanted to share with you and your listeners, because Ron Paul, the libertarian candidate in the last election, in 2009, he wrote a really, really great bill, and I only recently learned about it, but it's been reintroduced into Congress, and I think that I'd like to read some of these things because he's so clear. Okay.
He can hit a home run when he wants to. I mean, when he wants
he
to,
says,
he can
okay.
hit it out of the park, so yeah.
And here's what he has to say. And this was, he presented this speech. I'm going to do Ron Paul here. I'll be Ron Paul on April 30th, 2009. Madam Speaker, I rise to introduce the Parental Consent Act. This bill forbids federal funds from being used for any universal or mandatory mental health screening of students without the express, written, voluntary, informed consent of their parents or legal guardians. This bill protects the fundamental rights of parents to direct and control the upbringing and education of their children. The New Freedom Commission on Mental Health has recommended that the federal and state governments work toward the implementation of a comprehensive system of mental health screening for all Americans. The commission recommends that universal or mandatory mental health screening be implemented in public schools as a prelude to expanding it to the general public. However, neither the commissioner's report nor any related mental health screening proposal requires parental consent before a child is subjected to mental health screening. Federally funded universal or mandatory mental health screening in schools without parental consent could lead to labeling more children as ADD or ADHD and thus force more children to take psychotropic drugs such as Ritalin against their parents' wishes. Already, too many children are suffering from being prescribed psychotropic drugs for nothing more than children's typical rambunctious behavior. According to the Medco Health Solutions, more than 2.2 million children are receiving more than one psychotropic drug at one time. In fact, according to Medico Trends, in 2003, total spending on psychiatric drugs for children exceeded spending on antibiotics or asthma medication. Many children have suffered harmful side effects from using psychotropic drugs. Some of the possible side effects include mania, violence, dependence, and weight gain. Yet parents are already being threatened with child abuse charges if they resist efforts to drug their children. Imagine how much easier it will be to drug children against their parents' wishes if a federally funded mental health screener makes the recommendation.
That's universal, all it takes is one person to make a recommendation. That's all that it takes. One person says this, that you're guilty. We don't have due process anymore. Oh, that person said you're guilty. Okay, you're guilty. You have to take the drug till you don't want to. Okay, we're taking your kids, and we're going to force them now. They're a ward of the state. Unbelievable.
Now, let me give you a scenario
sorry.
Of what's going to happen. Let me give you a scenario of what's going to happen if Mr. Murphy, Representative Murphy's bill somehow passes in spite of the fact that he's lying about the facts. Okay, all right? Okay, if this passes, then let's say a mother in Colorado is under the impression that she can control her 28-year-old son's life in New Hampshire, okay? Just imagine that scenario. Let's say she doesn't like his choice of business partner or girlfriend or has all kinds of ideas about how he should be living his life and conducting his relationships.
Right.
She becomes convinced because she reads a couple of pop psychology books, where she becomes interested in a psychologist who has a following, and she is now ready to diagnose her family member, her 28-year-old son, starting a business in New Hampshire. She's able to diagnose him from Colorado as being mentally ill. This bill gives family members the power to do that. Now, let's look at the mother and say, why would she do something like that? She thinks she's doing the right thing. She believes because she hasn't been able to deal with her own issues about her own child raising or whatever, because we don't know what's in her mind, but
right.
She doesn't recognize the boundaries that she has between her son. So actually, she's the one who's got the problem. You get my picture?
No, absolutely.
Okay, so these bills all assume the absolute best mental health on the part of someone who's interfering with someone else's life. And what will happen is you're going to have several things that are just going to be a disaster. Number one, you're going to have a lot of people force-treated in their homes,
mm-hmm.
which is going to give a larger captive audience to the pharmaceutical industry, which is exactly what they want. even though they've admitted that their drugs don't work, they're going to be forced on people. Even though it's been, you know, they've been tied into the I don't know if anyone read the toxicology report that just came out for Robin Williams, but that was a drug-induced suicide. There's,
it's not even
debatable. Oh, no, I can list the drugs. Seroquel, Remeron, those two alone have suicide. He had just been put on Seroquel. That is a drug that causes suicide. Any
no,
of the times when,
right.
when and you know you, you want and when you look at drug induced suicides, look first for hanging.
Mm-hmm.
Look first for hanging.
Why did they hang? What is that?
Okay,
why
well,
is that?
I have personally experienced. I haven't really discussed this with your listeners, but I came to this by way of personal experience, and so I have been absolutely crazy on those drugs and believed that my craziness was a brain disease, which turns out not to exist.
Right.
And, okay, so I've experienced it. And what I can tell you is these drugs cause something called akathisia. It's a feeling of restlessness that you have to jump out of your body. It's just an incredible feeling of restlessness. And now, and so the thing is, this is one of the things that drug companies do on their labels is they say suicide in at least four or five different ways. And akathisia is one of the ways that they say suicide and violence because that's what causes it.
Wow.
In addition to that, when they are, you know, at the same time as I say these things, the fact of the matter is there are people who are listening to this show right now, and they know perfectly well that because they took an antidepressant for maybe 6 weeks, that really saved their life. Okay? Now, if we deny that reality, that's insane too. This is real. Sometimes numbing out is what people need.
Right.
Okay. Used to be after my child died. I had a child who died after 4.5 months.
Oh.
She was terminally ill the whole time. After my baby Sarah died, and her birthday is going to be November 12th. She would have been 31.
Wow.
I just thought blocked. But it's nice to mention that she existed on the radio. She's a brave little soul. But after she died, Ken, I was in this little town on the border of Texas and Oklahoma. My ex-husband was serving in the public health service, and I got drunk for a week. And you know what? That really helped me. That's what these drugs are. It's the same thing. Except that these drugs are much more complicated, and about 10 to 15% of the population can't take them. And no one is testing to see who those people are.
That's what I was trying to get at. Who's on them that should not be on them?
Right. Well, let me tell you, there's a doctor in Hickory, New Hampshire. I can't think of his name right now. But he will not prescribe antidepressants to anyone without doing a couple of genetic tests. One is cytochrome pathway 450. I may have discussed this in the past. And another is a gene called MTHFR, which I refer to in a way that I won't say on radio. But it has to do with methylation. The research on this has been done by this amazing, the Julia Child of neuroscience. She's a psychiatrist in Australia? She's Australian, Yolanda Lucera. And a friend of mine was at a presentation with her recently, and someone asked, can you prove that this genetic mutation means that people are going to be violent on antidepressants or psych drugs? And she said, I have 700 files, 700 effing files. She's been doing this research for decades. There's no question about it. We don't know what the prevalence, but it's. I mean, I remember that Yolanda Lucera had written that it could be 40% of the population. I've heard other people suggest that it's more like 10 to 15. We don't know, and that's the point.
Well,
we don't know.
A lot of people keep it in. They don't tell you that they're on them. They could be on them. Your neighbor could be on them. Your brother, your...
That's
you
right.
Know.
And this is why the Cochrane Institute, which is the only independent medical research foundation right now, and is really, people are really listening to the Cochrane Institute, and they're saying they think that they think these drugs should be removed from the market because doctors are unable to handle them.
Well, I think the patients are unable to handle them. I think the brain is unable to handle these drugs. And the probably, I mean, look at all the people that they go on these, mass killings. They were all on them, and then they either went on a mass killing or
robbed. We are not going to be telling the truth. We are not going to be telling the truth if we don't say that there are some people who really do take these drugs, and they are like, it is true. There, I know people.
Sure,
I mean, I didn't believe this. I'm so grateful, as a matter of fact, to NAMI. I've met many, many people, and I can see where there is a big divide, and the divide is that there's all kinds of different people, and everybody's voice counts. The drugs are not for everyone. They're not for most people. For most people, they're an obstacle. And in fact, you change a thought, you change the person. But then again, there are also people who otherwise cannot live, you know, and it should be their choice, but it's a choice. It's a choice. And there really are people whose quality of life is improved. But that deserves to be a choice.
Well, what is really a better way to not medicate, I guess you would call, whatever they would label as insane? I mean,
well, I'll tell you what the best indicator for insanity is. It's living in Western civilization. We need to look at our culture. This isn't about people who are crazy. This is about people. Here, let me give you the model for intergenerational trauma. Here's how, intergenerational trauma is very real. And the way it works is that you've got dysfunction and unhappiness and misery, and everybody keeps it in, and then someone erupts. And it becomes symbolic for everyone around. They get rid of that person, and then things go back the same way until there's another eruption. And that's really what you see. People, most therapists won't, if someone's having a hard time, there's a whole family system involved. There's a whole family system involved. And we have to stop this idea that everybody should work 7 days a week, 80 hours a week, and kids should be in daycare watching TV and playing violent video games. This is what we get.
Exactly. No, you're absolutely right. It is the culture. And we're
so
the only ones.
So the thing is, we've talked about these drugs ad infinitum, but you know what? We're talking about these drugs, what we're not talking about is the fact that all these kids are playing video games, and that the new, I just saw the movie Fury yesterday, which is a really beautiful movie that I don't think kids should ever see.
Right.
But you know what? There's a video game out for it now. So what, I'm not sure how we're different from ISIS. And why are we so surprised? We're training these little warriors, and they feel like they're powerless, and they're imploding and exploding. That's what's happening in our society, because we have lost our moral compass.
Well, we've
and
also
we have
lost
to take
how
it back.
To talk. We can't talk to
exactly.
each other. We talk to
That's
each other
right.
on text. Because
God forbid you
or...
should be angry. God forbid you should raise your voice.
Right.
That's a mental illness.
Well, God, not in my family. That's if you're not yelling and screaming at somebody, then you're mentally ill.
I was speaking with Michelle Ryder's lawyer earlier today. I wanted to bring up Michelle Ryder, but I was speaking with her lawyer, Randy Kretschmar, and he said, "You're angry." And I said, "I'm not angry. I'm from New York."
Well, I mean, I understand the New Yorkers out here. I mean, you know when they're angry. I mean, just because they're yelling and it's loud doesn't mean anger. That's passion. That's,
yes,
who they
that's
are.
That's right.
You know, that's
right. Well, that didn't go over for me when my family moved down south. I had to learn a different way.
Well, now you're in Alaska. So you've moved up.
Yes, and you know what? There are a lot of New Yorkers in Alaska.
Oh, I'm sure there are. Hey, Alaska.
A lot of New Yorkers in Alaska.
I've been to Alaska on board ship, and I tell you, going through those islands, you know what's great about it? There is no beach. Because it just goes straight down. So the ships can go right through. We can reach out and touch these islands as we're sailing right through them. But in,
it's amazing.
No,
I haven't even seen most of the state. I've been so busy working on for psych rights. And you can't. I mean, there's a war going on in this country.
Yes,
we're at war in this country.
The real war on drugs. The real war on drugs is right here, right here. This is the real war on drugs. Now, yeah, I know heroin and cocaine and all that crap. Yeah,
but
that's
it's not
problem.
A war on drugs. This is a war about the medical profession.
Right.
This is a war about the medical profession. So here's the deal. Let's go back in history.
They hit everybody at every angle.
Okay, but that's what they do. That's what corporations do. They lay out 10-year plans, right? They plan ahead. Monsanto, patent life. You know, I mean, they really do. They think ahead. And so let's see how they've thought ahead. Let's go back to 1949. The chemical companies owned by the Rockefeller family.
Yeah.
They take over medicine, right? Okay. So let's just look at what's happening 50 years later, roughly. The American people don't want that the Rockefellers' monopoly on medical care to adversely affect their health. Okay, so it's inevitable that was going to happen.
Right.
So that's the battle. The battle is about drugs, but the battle is about the real battle is about our right to be healthy, our right to choose our health care, our right to receive health care, our right to be healthy enough and to be able to go to school. That's the idea. Mitt Romney is the one who came up with the model for Obamacare, and it's a great idea. You know, when people don't have to worry about their health.
There are ideas of it, but
exactly,
the problem is
exactly.
When you have the government who's going to implement it, it's not going to be implemented properly. It's not written properly.
Okay, maybe that's true, Ken. Maybe that's true, but here's another way of looking at it. It isn't the government. It's the pharmaceutical industry which owns medicine, which owns the government.
Right, well, it's basically
it's kind of like the East India Company in the Revolutionary War.
Well, it's a mafia.
It wasn't the British government. It was the East India Trading Company controlling the British government.
Sure. It's always a corporation somewhere. Somebody who's got a lot of money is the one who's actually running. They're actually playing the
right.
games and moving the pieces.
So what happened? Right. So what happened when Obamacare got rolled out is that what the broken medical system that's trying to prevent natural cures for cancer, trying to take kids away from people whose kids are healthy because they didn't have chemotherapy. In other words, force this kind of medicine on the whole public. That's what happened. It wasn't that the idea to have more equitable health care, that wasn't, or to ensure more Americans, that wasn't the problem. It was the corporate agenda that just opened, went through the floodgates. Oh, look, we're going to get more. We're going to get them. We're going to get them all. We're going to diagnose everybody. We're going to have mental health screening in every school. And that's the way everything happens. It's like, things are just not simple. I wish they were.
No, I wish they were too. But the problem is yes, I do believe money is important, but too many people they're not thinking of the lives that they are affecting when they're making that buck. You know what I mean? I mean, they
That's
are
right. How can
affecting
you?
Children, they're affecting adults, they're affecting teenagers, and they don't look at them as human beings. They don't have a brain, they don't have
and
a heart, they don't have blood.
Maybe they're taking Prozac. Maybe
they look at
them
as a dollar sign. How can I make money off of this person? How can I make
money?
Well,
here's one to blow your mind. Let me blow your mind a little. What do you think the first of all, how many of those bank guys, those investment banker folks on Wall Street during the whole complete bank fiasco, how many of them were taking antidepressants which suppress your conscience?
I'm sure there was quite a few of them. I'd say good.
Yeah, that's one of the things that goes away when you take a drug like Prozac. You listen to people. I'm going to send you a documentary, and I hope your readers. I hope you will be leaders. I hope your listeners will be leaders. And that mean, and all I mean by leaders is take your power, hold on to your power, and understand that no one else is going to do this for us. And remember that our government has to be afraid of us. That's the way our country was designed to function.
Exactly. That's the whole point. But too many people have gotten away from it because, well, that takes away power. And if I don't have power, I don't have control. And too many people
Can we go back?
Go ahead.
Can we go back to the woman in Colorado and the, whose son is in New Hampshire? Let's just play that out a little further and see what a disaster that can be. Okay, so the mother in Colorado, the mother in Colorado who hasn't dealt with her issues, and she sees she believes that she has a right to micromanage her son's life, right? And she thinks she's doing this for the right reason because really she does very much love her son, right? So now she, after harassing them, she and her business partner, they're opening a business and it just gets to be too much. And then one of them seeks counseling, has to get some mental health treatment because she doesn't even feel safe anymore because this woman is threatening to have a tough love intervention and come to New Hampshire and try to get her evaluated for mental illness. I mean, this is so creepy. It's just impossible to describe. So then, okay, so they take, let's say they take a restraining order out on the mother out there in Colorado. Now, that's our court system. So just imagine that there are thousands of those 28-year-old kids whose mothers want them treated for mental illness. And it's not unusual.
Well,
imagine the number of restraining orders, okay? Then you've got all the costs. It's just, it's going to be a mess. If this bill passes, Ken, it's just going to be a mess.
Well, anybody can, anybody who in, you can make a complaint against somebody, and that's all that it takes. That's all that it takes anymore.
That's right. And let's just say that you're in that town and you have a friend and you believe, you know, you've been drinking the Kool-Aid. You think your community obligation is to report people who you think might have mental illness because then what's the worst thing that could happen to them? They could be helped. You don't get it. But you're coming from this. So then you talk to your friend and you don't understand what they're saying. And you know they've been through a lot of stress, and you don't understand what they're talking about. And then you jump to the position that there's something wrong with them. And that's always the way it goes. I mean, there's one guy who was in a mental institution for 20 years, and you know what his crime? You know why he was mentally ill? You know why he was diagnosed with schizophrenia?
Why?
Because they didn't understand Hungarian, and he didn't speak English.
You hit on it right there, the word listening. Now, there's a big difference between hearing and listening. Hearing is nothing more than picking up sounds. Anybody with half a broken eardrum can hear. Listening is understanding what you are hearing. And people don't want to take the time to actually listen. One, they might be...
Well, part of the reason for that is because we're afraid. Okay, so here's what happens. When you're afraid and you're listening to someone, you know what you're doing in your mind? You're thinking of how you're going to need to respond. What you do when you're afraid. But when you're not afraid and you can just listen and not make any judgments, that's a whole different kind of listening. And that's nourishing to people who are speaking. They feel validated.
That's what real communication.
Yeah. Yeah, that used to take place around the dinner table.
What dinner table?
Right.
No, that doesn't happen anymore. It's the television hanging around the Kim Kardashian show. I mean, come on, America, we got to.
But there are parents. I mean, there are really, really wonderful, wonderful parents whose kids don't watch these shows, and I'm telling you, people are having trouble. There are more chronic kids with chronic diseases, and that's what, you know, look at the medical kidnappings. Look at what Michelle Ryder is going through. Isaiah Ryder wasn't sitting around watching violent video games. He's an amazing kid. This is a boy who's had just such challenges, and he's really got a lot of lead. We need to be watching this boy He's going to go places. But let me tell you, he can't get adequate medical care in Kansas City. Nobody wants to touch this kid with this case in the media. And then people are so nasty to Michelle Ryder. You can't even imagine the nasty things. And she's been under such stress, and I'm telling you, she's going to lose her house.
I don't understand. Why are they doing that to her?
This is the problem that we have in our country. When I say we've lost our moral compass, I'm not kidding you. People need to learn how to behave.
Right.
You do not talk to someone who's going through something like this and tell them nasty. If you don't have something nice to say, don't say anything at all. This could be happening to you.
Angel Cook.
The same with Angel. You know, Angel's had stomach surgery. Angel's not doing very. Angel's. This is killing her.
I tried meeting that guy. I taped the conversations. You know, the so-called foster parent who had children under his care. Well, you've seen the Facebook post that he has sent her.
I have. He said to her. He said to her, "Your kids deserved the abuse that they got. He's sick."
I tried getting him to respond to that. Of course, he wouldn't, and then he called me back, and I taped both of the conversations.
Does anybody think this is like a reality show, you and me?
No. No, but this guy, I mean, why would he be doing it? And he still got children. Why does this?
I know. You know what? I want to hear from your listeners. Who's listening today? I want to hear. Is anybody listening to us? What do people think? What do people want to do? I mean, I'd really like to hear from your listeners.
Well, right now, I've got my brother. He wouldn't know what you were talking about. He wants to talk about football, but.
If anybody wants to call in and ask me a question, please make my day.
All right, let me give out the number again. 646, you know it. I say it a million times. 646-716-7978. And that is for Nancy Rubenstein Del Gaitis.
Del Judas. You can call me Nancy Rubenstein.
Oh, okay.
You can call me Nancy Rubenstein. Okay.
I've heard you pronounce Del Judas. Okay, now I've got it.
Yeah, Del Judas. It doesn't matter. I'm Nancy.
Nancy.
But let's go back to the situation in New York. NAMI is giving this guy, Tim Murphy, an award. It's like the drug companies giving themselves an award. That's what it is. It's crazy. And people need to say no. And let me just go one more step and take you back to the mom in Colorado and the 28-year-old son who has to take a restraining order out on his mom. The mother of his business partner whose daughter is really traumatized by this bullying. It's nothing but bullying, and bullying really hurts people, okay? So the mother has to deal with this, and so she calls NAMI, right? Okay?
Right.
And NAMI tells her that what she needs to do is to convince her daughter that she's mentally ill, that it's all her problem, and that they will help. If you call NAMI and you have a problem, you have a brain disease. It's as simple as that. They teach people to lie. But it's complicated. I used to think it was one-sided, but it just isn't. What would you do? Here's the other side of it, okay? What would you do if you have to think about this. What would you do if you're a mother? You've got a son who you cannot communicate with. He's violent. He's been on and off psych meds for years, and he scares the hell out of you. And your worst fear, when he comes to see you, he does all kinds of things that you can't be with him. But you know that he needs help, and you know that if he doesn't get help, he's going to be in prison.
Right.
And this describes so many people. You're that mother. When you call NAMI and they tell you, you know what, if he's in a good place right now, I'm not going to tell you what they're, I can't repeat their advice. because they teach people to lie. But I can't stand here and say that I don't understand why she does it. It's not as simple as many of the people say, but what is very simple is that NAMI is the drug company. They are the drug companies. They're not there to tell you what alternatives that you can have, that you can, that your family can engage in,
because
to,
then the
to work out your problems.
Because then the kids will be on the drugs, and they're not
going
to make as much money.
They believe in brain diseases, and that's all they're interested in. Is forcing people to be compliant, and they don't. And they have this line that they call people like me. They say that people like me have compassion that kills. It's a really nasty argument, but I have friends who are NAMI people because I had to do that. I had to research. I had to find out where are these people coming from, and they are coming from real needs and perspectives, part of which the drug companies have created and our societies have created. We have to all take responsibility for this.
No,
it's, I don't see, you know, I know you see this as an us and them thing, but this is nothing that's happening today did not happen with every single one of us. And it's time we all carefully got off our drugs, stopped drinking the Kool-Aid, and took responsibility. Those of us who are in our I'm 60 years old this summer.
Wow.
And I know people who say, you know, my kids are adults and it's over. Well, guess what? It's not, because we screwed up.
Well, hey,
it's not.
we can fix these things. The question is, do we want to? And if we do, we're going to have to take responsibility. We're going to have to take accountability.
Right.
But people don't want
that.
Right. They'd rather let the government take it, because if the government screws it up, well, then they can sit back and they can bitch about it. Well, it's easy to bitch.
Well, that's
anybody
true, but then also that's true. The other side of that is that people bitch when they feel absolutely powerless. When people don't feel powerless, that's my observation.
No, you're absolutely correct. I notice that in myself from time to time too. You know,
right.
You just
but you know, there's all of this. You know, people. You know, if you're a single, it's impossible for young people to survive today. I just don't know how they do it, and a lot of them don't. They're not living anything like the lifestyle that I did when I was in my 20s. I didn't have to fear whether I was going to have to pay for groceries or rent. That's nothing.
Yeah, well,
that's something that never had to cross my mind.
Remember when you were a kid, and you knew that you know, the year 2000 was coming, and you knew you were going to experience it in your lifetime. You know, you had a good chance anyway. Did you ever think that we would be where we are today? I never. Never in a million years did I think, the more that I find out, every day I work on this stuff about medical kidnapping. They kidnap children for all kinds of reasons, medical reasons, pharmaceutical industry. I mean, you name it. Everybody's stealing from everybody. I never once thought that this country would get, even humanity, would get to where we are. I'm afraid to find out anymore, because I mean, I've already had a buttful. I've had enough.
Well, can
it's
I tell you? I don't think I'm going to overwhelm you with this, but you really gave me the opportunity to talk about something I wanted to talk about.
Oh, go ahead.
So I grew up in, I mean, until I was 12, I lived in New York, but my father later, when I was in college, my father had done a number of other things, and he'd gotten his PhD late in life. And he became a tenured professor at Syracuse University. And so this is back in the 1970s. And the thing is, he did foresee this, okay? And every year, Syracuse University gives out an award called the Dan and Mary Lou Rubenstein Social Justice Award. That's my mom and dad. They've both passed away. But here's where the story gets a little bizarre. I retreated from politics when I had my kids, and I became a folk artist, and I think it was the first song I ever recorded. It was before, just as tape was moving out, and it was going to be analog. And anyway, it was a song. It was I wrote it one morning, and my youngest daughter said to me, "Mommy, is that a song, or did you make it up?" And it was just something that just popped into my head. And the words went, Oh, grains of sand are in the desert, drops of water in the sea. The earth is in the solar system, and it's all a mystery. But I'm in the middle, in the middle, in the middle. Oh, I'm in the middle of me. Anyway, it goes on from there. Well, a mental health agency, this is so ironic.
Well, you're right. I was following it. You're absolutely right. You are in the middle of the middle of you. You are.
Well,
absolutely.
That's true, but here's the last verse. Here's the last verse, which my parents called fascist, okay? It got bootlegged. I recorded it. It got bootlegged all over New York and New Hampshire and Vermont, and somehow my parents' book club, someone showed up with it, and they played it, and they discussed it, this group of professors in the book club, and they said it was fascist, and I had no idea what they were talking about, but now I totally do. So here's the last verse. My gloves are in the glove compartment. My glasses are in their case. Here's the key thing. And all over the universe, things are in their place. So it gives me pause to ponder, will wonders never cease? If everything's in order, then we all can live in peace. And they were saying that is the mindset that allows tyranny to happen.
Well,
they were right. They were really. I mean, I still love the song, and they. But they really. The thing is, my dad was a social worker, and he was in New York City. He worked on the Lower East Side of Manhattan.
But the pieces are in place for you, not for anybody else. I mean, as long as the pieces are in place
right.
for you. I understand
right, but
it
was
bad.
That mindset. It is that mindset that prevents people from accepting that something could be very wrong. It is that mindset that allowed me to do that. It was that mindset that allowed me to think that I could just let go of knowing what was going on with our government and the world and just focus on my little family and everything would be fine. Well, it wasn't.
Oh.
And my parents were right. And my dad really fought. My dad fought really hard because he didn't want to see social workers become therapists. And I said, why is that? Because I wanted to be a therapist. And I said, why do you feel that way? He handed me this book by Thomas Szasz called The Myth of Mental Illness. And if anybody's listening and they really want to read something good, Thomas Szasz, S-Z-A-S-Z, Thomas Szasz, The Myth of Mental Illness. There are YouTube videos. It's not hard to find. Anyway, the point is, he said when social workers become therapists and focus on individuals, community organization will be ignored and communities will fall apart. And I don't know that it's definitely causal. There's a lot of different things, but that's a big piece. When my dad was a professor at Syracuse, social workers were proud of the work that they did. Today you go online and what you see is T-shirts that say, I'm a social worker, I drink. They don't work for people anymore. They work for the government. They are agents of the government.
I was trying to get at beforehand. When the help that you need, you seek out and get help. But the help that you seek are working for the people that are... Well, keeping you where you are. So you're not going
that's
to get
right,
any
that's
better.
True. That's true.
You're not going to get any better.
That's why I love Elizabeth Warren. Because this is all about, this needs to, you know, we need to get corporate personhood out of our misunderstanding of the Constitution.
Well, you know, there are some people on both sides of the aisle. That are
yes, on, I
told,
I, you know, there's no difference between Democrat and Republican in my
not
mind.
Anymore.
I consider Barack Obama to be a liberal Republican. It's not about the parties anymore. We need everybody working together. It just doesn't matter. Either you are elected and you represent the people, or you represent the corporate elite. There's only two choices. I don't care what party you're from.
I don't believe in any parties. I don't believe in parties are for corruption and for corruption purposes only. Period. I do not believe in parties. I want to once go into the voting booth and vote on the individual. I don't want to see their party next to their name. I want to vote on the individual. I really do believe that if you win and you voted actually on the individual and rather than the party, I think we'd have a much better balanced government. And
ideally, I would agree with you. Ideally.
Oh, it's in a perfect vacuum, but you're never going to get it.
But I'll tell you something. I'm a deep lover of American history. There's probably no subject that I'm really more passionate about. And this country has functioned sometimes in ways that have inspired the world, and we can go back there. This has happened before. The Reagan era, they repealed the Glass-Steagall Act and let the corporations take over. And now we have huge monopolies and we have a corporate elite. That's happened before. And then we had the Depression, and then we had Franklin Delano Roosevelt. And I don't know if you've seen that series that's aired, but Ken Burns is a phenomenal filmmaker, and he did I didn't see the last of it because it's too close to today. It was just too painful for me to watch the last of it. But it's extremely relevant. One of the books that I love the most, if people are interested in American history when it works, there is the Marshall Plan. What this country did for Europe, we didn't just do it for Europe. We did it for ourselves. We did it for the world, and we did it beautifully. And there were not these kind of scandals that we have today. And there's a great book written by a guy named Greg Berman, and I haven't seen any that he's come out with any other books, but it's a phenomenally researched book about that New Deal era. It's very inspiring. If you want to feel good about what this country is capable of, it's a fantastic book. It's called The Noble Adventure.
Look what we did. Just think about where, if we go into a particular, Americans, and I use the word fight, you can use it as an actual war, you can use it as anything. But when we go into it to just fight, or we go into it to win, It's completely different. Now, World War II, we didn't go into it just to fight. We went into it to win. And look what we did after we won. And look what we brought. Now, we did that in 3.5 years. We won that war. And then in a few more years,
Europe. Ken, I'm glad
and
you
then,
brought that
then,
up, because let's bring
now
up
with
veterans.
Vietnam, we did not go into Vietnam to win. We went in there to fight. Look what we're doing with ISIS, what's going on in the Middle East. We're not going in there to win. We're just going in there to fight. Now, who's making the money? Who's making the money off of these friggin' wars? This is what
You know what? When it comes to this, I'm only interested in one thing, and that is what's happening to veterans in this country. That's what I'm focused on. What I'm thinking about through the election, and I'm thinking about stuff. One of the things I'm thinking about is, what do these people? First of all, who are these people, and what do they have to come home to? This was an all volunteer army, mm-hmm. which was probably a bad idea. Well, it is a bad idea. We have a track today of tons and tons of young kids who think that they think. They don't have any realistic expectation that they can go to college any other way than a few options, and one of them is the military. And this is not the way. This is not what our founders intended at all. And then when these people come back, what they've been through is, I saw the movie The Fury yesterday, and I'm sure that's why Brad Pitt wanted to make that movie. He wanted, I really am. A week ago I saw his wife Angelina Jolie's movie Maleficent, and I loved that, and I see exactly what she was trying to do for her children. She was trying to give her female children, role models, and rewrite some of the fairy tales so that they didn't completely, give women the message that we are toys and tokens.
Right.
But this movie, with Brad Pitt, Fury, I don't think anybody can come out of that movie with what this young man survives and not want to turn around and listen to a vet. And that's the thing that people need to do. We need to stop focusing on what someone else needs to do. We need to focus on what we need to do. We all need to find veterans whom we just listen to. They need to talk. They shouldn't have to pay for it. And business people, maybe you don't know these people. See, this is the thing. When people came back from Vietnam, there was the draft. So the whole community had to deal with this. This was just like World War II. Everybody went. But this is different. Iraq, the last 20 years, people don't relate to these veterans, and we have to make them a part of our lives, and we have to make them a part of their communities. They have been through something that nobody in any other wars have ever been through. This is a whole different.
And it's not
changing.
Going away anytime soon.
It's not going away, but these people are highly skilled. These are highly skilled people, and people have to stop being afraid of them, and they have to reach out to them, and we have to hire them. These people will help lead our country. They know better than anybody else what's wrong with our country. They know better than anybody else.
Well, the problems that we have, I do believe, are self-inflicted, and there's only one person that can fix them, and that's yourself. You got any problem with whatever you have in your life, You have to identify it yourself. Well, collectively as a country, we have to identify the problem before we can fix it. I mean, you can't just a mechanic.
But if you're a corporation, what you want to do is you want to distract people. It's all about distracting people. So I'm always looking at this myself. Life, look at how fast-paced life has gotten to be. I mean, I long to go someplace where I can just hear nothing. It's so fast-paced. It's hard to know what you think when you're always reacting. And I like to take some time, and I write. So, you know, I need to know what I really think. And sometimes I have to withdraw, but most people don't have that opportunity. But we all do. You know, this is a time for people to really, really find your connectedness. Yes, we all have to be responsible for ourselves. But, you know, that message does tend to be oversold because people are afraid to reach out to each other. And this is what, you know, what got Justina Pelletier home was 4,000 people on a Saturday in May with signs out in front of the Boston Common. That changes everything. But we can't get that support, you know. But with something, there's a lot going on right now, and we don't have the support for Michelle Ryder that she deserves. And, you know, I mean, I can blame this and blame that, and the other thing, is it because she's a single mother? But there's a lot going on, and there's a lot going on in Kansas City. There's a lot going on in Missouri. But this boy really deserves the support. And what happens to families is that this just tears families apart. This just tears families apart.
You hit it right on there. It's not just the child. It's the parents. It's the grandparents.
That's right.
The cousins, the brothers,
mm-hmm.
the sisters. It's
mm-hmm.
the community. And if you're paying attention, mm-hmm. it's the entire country. And you're
That's
right. Justina Pelletier was in the news for what? About a week? And then once she got home, and then nobody wants to touch it anymore. These stories aren't going away. Justina Pelletier's story is not even close to getting over yet. That's got a
that's
whole
right.
other
That's right. And the thing is, if this is like a blip on people's radar, then it just goes on, just like I'm telling you.
Exactly.
Vera Sharav testifying in court in New York City in 2005. Eli Lilly, you're killing little children with your drug Zyprexa. What is the consumption now compared to 2005 of children? It's massive. It's
right.
massive. So we are all, you know, this is why I do what I do. I mean, I don't see that I have any other choice. There's this great quote by Arundhati Roy. You can't unsee what you've seen. See, that's the thing. And I see this process in people, and I've watched a lot of people wake up. And I find, to be honest with you, that's the most exciting part of my job. The most exciting part of my job is watching people pick themselves up, get really, 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 really pissed off, get really confused, get it all together, and then just become these articulate people that are just, you know, so centered in their own power as a human being, as a citizen. You know, we've got something to defend here. We do. We really do.
And it's okay to get angry. We're not going to get anything done. We would have never gotten our freedom the first time if we did not get angry. Human beings cannot get anything done until they get angry. And that doesn't mean you have to be violent. You know what I mean?
Well, yeah. We've talked a lot about this mental health stuff, and I want to tell you about some organizations that I want people to know about. I want people to know about an organization called Mind Freedom International. Mind Freedom International is a really powerful organization. They've done outreach even as far as like in Ghana. I know of projects in Ghana. This is an organization that has something called a human rights shield. And sometimes I've been a part of. I'm not an expert on Mind Freedom International, but I often do work with them on projects. But I remember that they've got this human rights shield, and people sign up with it, and then if they're then that gives us that gives Mind Psych Rights and Mind Freedom the opportunity to advocate for them, and we get people calling governors, and that's all it takes. I'll tell you what, in Anchorage, somebody calls Psych Rights. They don't even commit these people because, most 98% of the people who get committed don't meet the criteria, the real criteria for danger to oneself or to others. That's the criteria, danger to oneself or others.
But don't you have to admit yourself before you're admitted?
No, you don't.
Isn't that what it used to be, though? I mean, it never was.
It's been this way for a long time. This is classic. They tell you, here's what they tell you. They tell you, you get picked up, they tell you, well, if you sign in voluntarily, it will go easier for you. And then you think that means they'll let you out on an outpatient basis. So, yes, it does go easier for you, but it does go a little bit easier for you, but they commit you anyway.
Right.
They commit you anyway. So from my mind, I don't know. Everyone's case is different. It's really, I've seen so many different things play out in different ways. But I do know this. The more you document, the more transparency there is. And that's what we do. That's what we do. That's what Mind Freedom International does so well in their advocacy. And I know they've got a big group in New York that I know. And I'm sure they're going to have a big presence. There's going to be a protest, and it's going to be, I want to tell you guys where that's going to be, if I can actually find this article. There's a man named George Ebert who is organizing this, and he actually worked with my mother. I met him. I found out he lived in Syracuse, New York, and I said, did you know my parents? It turned out he actually had known my mother. My mother created a child care council so that services weren't redundant in Syracuse, New York. And so here, where are we? All right, people will gather. Let's see.
I'm right.
Well, I really don't know. I'm going to have to post something about it on your page that
all
people
right.
can figure out. But people will gather together at the Desmond Hotel and Conference Center at 660 Albany Shaker Road, Albany, New York, 122111 at 5 p.m. Friday, November 14th, to demonstrate solidarity in opposition to NAMI, New York State, and the Murphy Bill. And if there's one person listening to this who just decides to show up, I mean, this is what makes a difference. When
That's
these people see numbers, the numbers matter. The tweets matter. The numbers matter.
Hey,
they really matter.
What?
And I know people feel powerless, but you're really – that's the illusion. That's the biggest illusion of all, the illusion that you are powerless. It's just not true.
Well, that's why you start seeing on Facebook, and I work a lot with these Parents that have been separated from their children for God knows just a plethora of different reasons. I mean, they pick and choose. But before they really didn't have anybody. They didn't know where to go. Now there's all kinds of sites coming up, and I deal with these people all the time. And you have to get your story out every single day, because if you don't
do it
every day, you never know who's going to see it. You never know. Now I know it's a pain in the ass. I know it's a numbers game. So what you got to do it a million times to only get two people to see it. Well, that second person that sees it might be just the person that explodes it so everybody sees it. So you have to do it.
That's right. That's right. And then there's such a thing as a tipping point too.
Exactly.
But I'm really putting out the plea, because Michelle Ryder is just not getting the support. I think, you know, and we kind of wonder about this. I mean, I got good news about Tiffany Adams. She's represented now by counsel.
Good.
And I've been in contact with them just to let them know that I'm
ballistic over that story. What was only going to take
you know, it really helped.
Cover,
it really helped.
Took me 2
but
days
you know
to
something?
Cover them.
But I got to tell you, I mean, I was looking at the numbers, and I mean, they are both families that are equally deserving of the support of the public, and Michelle Ryder's support dwindled, and all of a sudden, support for 8-year-old Jackson took off, and I'm sure that there are many reasons for that. He's young, he's a child, probably people feel more maternal about him. But I also have other questions, but they're equally deserving, and I'm really hoping, you know, I'd like to come on and keep letting you know about what's going on with the case, because she's gonna, you know, it's rough. I mean,
right.
She's gonna lose her house because she's trying to come up with a way to get some financial support so she can just even get to the trial where she has to defend her own reputation in Chicago for advocating for her child.
I know, but I don't understand why are they attacking this woman so hard? They sent the kid
this
back
is
to
what
grandma.
They do.
They
were cackling. People inside the courtroom told me how disgusting it was.
Oh,
people inside the courtroom told me that there's joking. I mean, these people seriously don't care.
No.
And you know, stop trying to understand them. It's just what it is.
Why are they?
It's not our job to understand them. It's our job to stop this. I mean,
well,
you answer me this. You answer me this. You know that woman Amber, the doctor? How do you say to a 7-year-old child, if you're someone who's supposed to be a pediatrician, how do you say to a 7-year-old child, if it's up to me, you'll never see your mommy and daddy again? I don't care if your mommy was, I don't care who your mommy was.
Yeah,
he loves you. He loves his mommy. That's a horrible, horrible, cruel, cruel thing to do to a child.
You don't say that. You just don't not.
No, you don't.
That.
And how does somebody get to be a pediatrician and do something like that?
Well, that's
what the medical profession needs to answer for.
Called her.
These
up.
People have to work for us.
Show. And finally, after a couple of calls, and they were very nice to me, she had the public relations guy for the hospital of Children's Mercy. And they sent me, they said, give me your email address and I'll send you, our official response. And, of course, the official response is, you know, blah, 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 we care for children, we love and peace and unicorns and blah, 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 blah. And you know, you know, it was disgusting. So I read it on the air. What I do, it was ridiculous. But you know what I mean? I mean, but we're trying to make some headway. And the woman who, she's going to be coming on, Terry LaPointe, she's the one who wrote the article. She's going to be coming on this week, I think Thursday. She's
going to
be
wonderful.
Coming on.
I will have to listen. I'm going to have to listen because I had a little bit of contact with her. And I thought that article was really, really excellent.
I did, too. I told you, I said it's refreshing to see, you know, an article that actually covers the whole damn story without all the fluff, you know, a lot of these articles are just not very good. They cover a little bit here and there, but she went right to the point, and it was poignant, and, you know, I had to call that doctor. I had to look her up, but I found out who she is, and, I mean, these people, they just, it's all about them. They don't care, and you don't tell the mother, look, big hospitals take away children for stuff like this.
Really?
Who the hell is you?
Don't you know big hospitals are... Well, she's telling the truth. That's what they're doing.
Right.
And people need to be prepared. People need to be... And so can I mention a few things that people can do?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Well, one of the things that everybody in America ought to... In my opinion anyway, there's something called an advanced directive. And those can include psychiatry. And, you know, you can. The thing about signing an advance directive is that you can't necessarily control what's going to happen, but you've got yourself a document there that gives you legal recourse, because it makes very, very clear, it's signed and notarized in sound mind what your desires or wishes are, and it's very clear. And that can be used in court, because the biggest problem with psychiatry is that it discredits everyone, and that's how it's used. And our court system isn't going to give that up.
No.
And, you know, I mean, I had my own experience. I had to go to court, and a psychiatrist who had never met me before, never spoken to me before, declared that if I was saying that I don't have bipolar disorder, it meant I was crazy, but I don't know it. And that's part of my craziness, is that I don't know that I'm crazy. It's circular reasoning.
Well, because
anyway,
and
the judge in his decision, you know, basically this is, you know, they talk about, oh, take the stigma away from mental illness. Give me a break. There's no such thing. It is a stigma. You're saying this person's crazy and nobody else is, and it's just not true. We all are. and this is political social control. But you have, with an advance directive, you know, you make your wishes known, and then they can't. You've got it signed by a doctor, you've got it signed by a psychologist, you've got it notarized. You know, when you go to court, you're in the driver's seat.
Well, the problem with court anymore, there is no due process. It's whatever they want, whatever they decide.
Oh, yeah.
Decide. And then if they take your kids away, and then they tell you you got to do this, and follow all their procedures. Well, you follow all their procedures, but it's still never good enough. And now they want a bunch more procedures, and you're not doing it correctly. Or you're not doing it this. And then they can lie because they're getting the federal dollars. That's all this is about.
That's right.
All this is about is the federal. Well, the federal dollars are not federal dollars. Federal dollars are taxpayer dollars. They're your dollars. They are taking your money to steal your kids. And then once they take your kids, you have to pay for your child to be in foster care. So not only are they getting your money from the parents to raise this kid, but they're getting state money and they're getting federal money. They're getting a trifecta off every child that is taken. And if they're adoptable, oh, those pretty blonde-haired, blue-eyed, oh, yeah, those are pretty kids. They make a big chunk of change if they can adopt.
Oh, yeah,
the kid.
And then there are the rare disease subjects, like Isaiah Ryder. They were told that he was, you know, he's very rare, and there he is in Chicago, Foundation of the Neurofibromatosis Society and the Center for Research at the University of Chicago and Lurie's Children's. I mean, it was just it was so convenient for so many people.
Well, it's about money. That's all it's about.
Yeah.
There's
it's about money. No, it's about money. It's not
well,
just
it's
about
power,
money.
It's
about
money.
Power. It's about
it's
power. And people today, people. I don't know why people be. You know, I supported my ex-husband through medical school, and I look at him as a sad example of what happens to perfectly good people who go in with good intentions, who just want to have a quiet life and just do something, that they feel good about.
Well, the road to hell is paved with good intentions.
Exactly. Yeah. That's right. That's right. And
I don't think
most doctors are aware of the quote. My ex-husband is very naive.
Well,
my ex-husband is a very fine dermatologist in Concord, New Hampshire. He really is very naive. He does not, and I had a conversation with him the other night where he finally, is recognized that, I've been published in Europe and I really do. I have credentials for what I'm doing. That's something that he respects. He respects hard work and he respects credentials.
Right.
And so he actually admitted to me, this is overwhelming to me, and I don't have the same opinion as you do about the psychiatric profession. And I said I stopped him right there and I said, do you think that there's a difference between beliefs and opinions and facts? Do you think there's a difference? And he paused, and he said, I guess what I'm really saying is I'm not willing right now to be educated. It was a very interesting conversation.
Hmm.
He's exhausted. His work day starts like 8:30 in the morning, and he's double booked with seeing patients for like 15 minutes a day, forget about surgeries that he does for melanoma, until like 6 in the evening. And then he exercises. This guy is exhausted.
I don't want a doctor who is trying to save me, who hasn't slept in 4 days. I want somebody refreshed. You know what I mean?
That's why a lot of good doctors, they don't listen to the news at night. They don't read the other, the critics of their profession. They just want to be rested so they can see their patients the next day.
Well,
And they feel like there's, what's going on is crazy, and they don't. There's just so much going on. I mean, Ken, right now, the American Psychological Association is being protested over their contribution to torture at Guantanamo. There's a very large division in the American Psychological Association. There's a lot going on. I see it as a good thing. I see people waking up. There's a lot going on. And it all goes down to the same thing, which is what you say, which is money and power.
Money and power.
That's right.
So,
it's quite, there's a Chinese curse, may you live in interesting times. I believe we have...
Well, we are in some very interesting times, though. I never thought that we would be... My eyes are open, and the more I open them, the more I see. And I know a lot of times people don't want to open their eyes because they're afraid to see what they're going to see. Well, you have to, because that's a very dark tunnel, and if you don't open up your friggin' eyes, you're gonna run right into that locomotive. You have to open your
true.
Eyes.
That's karma. I mean, that's the law of natural... That's karma, is the law of natural consequences.
I don't like to open my eyes either. I mean, I'm human.
Yeah.
I'm no different than anybody else. But, at some point, you're going to have to open your eyes, because just because it's happening to your neighbor doesn't mean that it can't happen to you.
To your neighbor, you are responsible for being involved. That's what citizenship is.
Exactly.
Citizenship is responsibility for your neighbor. I don't care, if for some people you can just say, well, you're a Christian, this is, what would Jesus do? What did Jesus say? Jesus said, of all the things I've ever said, the most important is love your neighbor as thyself. How has that been forgotten? I don't care if you believe that Jesus was your personal savior, or maybe you just someone who is fascinated with him as one of the most profound thinkers and emotional beings that we know of in history. The fact of the matter is, we've turned Christianity into this consumer fiesta. We're all guilty, But, you know, we, right. you know, as a country, I mean, I keep flashing back on Jimmy Carter. You know, everyone's so emotional right now, but I just keep remembering Jimmy Carter on the television, which used to be black and white in my house, saying, you know, we're going to be in trouble if we don't stop, if we don't consume less and be less focused on consuming. And we've gotten to the place where that's the only way we can even conceive of progress is consumption.
Everything in life is a balancing act. Now, too much of anything, it doesn't matter what it is. It doesn't matter what it is. Too much of anything, like when you're baking a cake, life is a recipe. You got too much salt, well, it's not going to rise right. You got too much this, you got too little
of that. Speaking of recipes, I am just hungry beyond imagining, and it is dinner time in Alaska.
Well,
so
I'm sure
I am
going
to have to go. But let us continue our conversation, and perhaps, I was hoping to invite a woman who's done a TED Talk that I admire tremendously. Her name is Suzanne Beechey, and she's fascinating, but she's a little bit shy. She did an excellent TED Talk. I'll post it. The reason I would love to have her join you and I in conversation, Ken, is because Suzanne lost a son very tragically, and when she began to really research what happened to him, her questions led her to learn about science. And she's a lot of times NAMI. We in the reform movement we joke about them as NAMI mommies, but many of them are just people seeking solutions and asking questions. And Suzanne is someone that I would love to have weigh in on this before this protest on the 14th, in case some of your listeners are among the people that I talk about. There's a lot of suffering going on out there.
No, you're absolutely correct. And when I know I wrote on her, I know that's what I thought she was going to come on tonight. You know,
right.
I want her to come on.
No,
but
what I'm going to do is I'm going to send her the recording of this show, Ken,
and see if we
can't continue the dialogue.
All right. Oh, absolutely. So, Nancy, once again, thank you very much for coming on. It's always a pleasure to have you on. You do great work, and I do appreciate
it. Thank you so much, Ken.
Coming on. All right. Thanks again. All right. That's about all we've got tonight. I do got to cut it short. I've got a whole bunch of other stuff that I have to get done. I want to thank everybody that was listening tonight and the smartphones and everybody in the chat room. And Vito Esposito, you had a great show tonight, my friend. Very good show. Check out the Radio Jihad Network Monday through Friday. Actually, Monday through Monday. They got a show every night. Check them out. They're the experts. I am not. But there are a good bunch of people over there. Radio Jihad Network, and on Monday night at 6 p.m., right before you listen to me, you listen to Vito, and then you listen to this show, and that's how you do it. That's your Monday night from 6 to 10. That's all you got to do. You got everything that you need in life. So I want to thank everybody for listening. We'll see you back here tomorrow night at 8 p.m. Goodbye, everybody.
You feel that?